This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication. This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold. Today, we're going to start a program, Sliding into Chaos, Can We Protect the American Dream? A roundtable discussion with Kenny Eady, Rod Tyler, and myself. Well, thanks for coming. Hello, Rod.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Kenneth.
Hey, Johnny.
You know, Kenneth, you've been writing a lot of books. How many books have you written that were fiction, that were about not only characters, but issues that are facing the United States?
Actually, nine.
Nine books. Now, tell us a little about those nine books, and particularly about the issues that you were dealing with.
Well, I think the one that you read was called The Patriots Act, and that was about how our rights have been whittled away in the name of the war against terror, and what happened with my fictional character when he was, for no reason except being in the wrong place at the wrong time, thrown into Guantanamo and just left there to rot.
Now, I also read The Involuntary Spy.
Yes, you did. That was my first novel.
And that novel dealt with the degradation of our food supply, among other things, right?
Right. In that novel, a scientist who works for a large biotech company, which I changed the name, of course, but it was based on one that we all know and love, found out how dangerous the GMOs were and found out how his company was colluding with the government to essentially put poisonous food on the people's plates. And it's kind of like people have described as Snowden versus GMO. When he finds out that this information by basically spying on his own company, and he grabs a bunch of confidential papers and takes off because he's not safe in America anymore.
Rod, I wanted to say, I'm going to talk about you behind your back. No, in front of you. One thing that Kenneth, I think, saw was that as a lawyer, and he can explain more about this, Rod, he was attempting to actually sort of fight against the establishment in certain ways. But he found out that it wasn't that easy to do that and actually take any kind of public stance against these companies, which he can explain more. And so he decided he would have to address the issue to the public. And he felt that maybe the way to express this best was not just to express it intellectually, but to express it in fiction. Could you explain more about why you chose this venue?
Yeah, there's studies that say that our brain is wired to learn things, through stories. And that's how the first books were actually written, because they weren't written. They were told from generation to generation. People told stories to each other. And the same stories that became favorites of people around the campfire or in the living room turned into today's first book, which was the Bible. So we're our brains are actually wired to learn from hearing stories. And knowing that fact, I thought, why just make something entertaining? Why not teach people something at the same time?
But what happened as a lawyer that kept you from really, challenging the establishment in the way that you wanted to?
Well, as a lawyer, you need as a civil lawyer, you basically need a case. So you need a client who's got enough money to pay to bring up the issue, which. In a federal case, for example, it takes several hundred thousand dollars to prosecute it till the end. The game is kind of rigged against you. you got to have enough money. The lawyer can't really bring up an issue on his own, except through maybe editorial opinion eds, and I've written a lot of those as well. But your hands are kind of tied.
So just go on a little bit more about some of the other issues that you've covered in your books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the latest book is called that I'm working on now is called The Spy Files, and I don't know if you've noticed in the news lately, a lot of journalists have been disillusioned with the mainstream media, who basically just regurgitates whatever the government tells them to. And they've gone to use what's called the Freedom of Information Act to get documents from the government that the government doesn't really want to give away, doesn't want the people to see. So sometimes the journalists have to sue for the documents, and that's what this case is all about. The lawyer in my story sues for the journalist on behalf of the journalist to get the documents through the Freedom of Information Act, and becomes a target in a federal investigation himself.
Wow. And I list a few other issues that you've covered.
Well, I've covered the issue of the internet and how the internet is a double-edged sword. In my latest novel, Killer.com, which basically an examination of how people hurt each other without knowing each other anonymously. And in this book, a group of cyber slanderers actually hire a killer online to wipe somebody out.
Well, you know, looking at the news, as a matter of fact, Donald Trump has said some more controversial things about the internet, closing down areas of the internet to prevent actually all kinds of things. After he's done some other controversial things, like banning all Muslims, trying to get people not to come here, to be forbidden to come here, and setting up a wall after kicking out 11 million Hispanics, which is all very interesting. But do you feel that, you know, with all this stuff that you're bringing to the table, you must feel that there's something a little bit wrong, right?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things wrong. I mean, for example, another book that I wrote is called Unreasonable Force, and that's all about police brutality, which I think is run rampant in the United States, where our police force is essentially turned into an army. They've got armored vehicles, SWAT vans, tear gas, high-tech battering rams and flash grenades and all kinds of stuff that they need to basically suppress demonstrations, which is funny, because in France, where I live most of the time, people pride themselves on being able to demonstrate. And I think you read in the news last week that they were doing a protest or demonstration in favor of the Paris climate talks, and the police, because of the recent terrorist acts, broke it up with tear gas.
Wow.
So that was shocking to me.
Well, the times, they are changing.
Yes.
Not just in the United States, but everywhere else. We're going to take a break now.
Let's play Look What You Have Done by Stephanie Slevin, a great UK singer-songwriter.
And we'll be right back.
Look what you have done to this little child of mine. Look what you have done, for your darkness has gone blind. You broke and starved her body, and I freed you from your sin. But look what you've done to this child of mine, 'cause you let the darkness in. You cannot be saved, for I gave you a last chance. But you chose the path to darkness, and you did the devil's dance. Oh, look what you have done to this little child of mine. Look what you have done, for your darkness has gone blind. Forever in her sorrow, her happiness a show. Little broken girl that nobody wants to know. And I did always love her since the age of birth, but she could not feel my love, for she felt she had no worth. Oh, look what you have done to this little child of mine. Look what you have done, for your darkness has gone blind. You can see her torment as she cries out in the rain, and I can feel her pain as she always calls my name.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who is a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of the stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was 6. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy, we ditched the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kendall. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kendall.
Nowadays, if you are a serious business person, just getting assistance from someone with a license and a bit of experience may not be sufficient. In fact, your realtor actually needs to be knowledgeable enough to be one of your top advisors. Whether you are facilitating a giant merger or selling your company, there's a lot at stake besides your finances. There is the future value of your current investment, financial freedom, integrity, and overall reputation. If you need this kind of assistance, Sandra LaFlamme is a real estate expert with the experience, reputation, and knowledge qualified to assist you in all your key transactions. Sandra LaFlamme, real estate services with integrity and conscience. Contact her today at 888-366-8070. That's Sandra LaFlamme at 888-366-8070.
Hi, this is Johnny Bluestar. We're now discussing how our country, the United States, is sliding into chaos, and can we protect the American dream? Now, Rod, you've done a lot of studies of these things, of what's going on. You're reading news material and articles every single day. You're talking to me about them. What is your opinion? How did you come into this idea that something is wrong?
Well, you know, Johnny, we have long discussed the erosion of the civil liberties in the United States. Civil liberties are being destroyed every day in the United States, including the attacks on privacy and many other rights, not only by the Obama administrations, which, by the way, many people thought would actually change things. But actually, it's been disastrous for civil liberties in the United States. And it appears that we're not alone in voicing these concerns. You know, a lot of people in the United States
are concerned about the freedom, their freedoms, and we can see that there's a higher awareness of what's happening in the United States. And it's not only what this phenomenon is not exclusive to the United States. There is a widespread movement in all the Western nations to restrict civil liberties and to turn countries into police states. And it is a reality that we're facing, and it's very, very important that we talk about it.
You know, I was brought up, as I mentioned to both of you, by a civil rights lawyer, and I know that my father would turn over in his grave if he knew what was happening right now, because it's such an affront to everything that he believed in and everything that I was taught when I was younger. And it's filled me with a kind of despair, but also a kind of determination. So the first thing I'd like to ask is, could it be protected? Could we do something about this? Is there any way to protect the American dream? Ken?
Yeah, there is. The problem right now is we have an uninformed public. If people were more informed, and that's what I'm trying to do through my books, if people were more informed, then they'd realize that they have the power in their own hands to control the people who are in power right now, who are basically doing whatever the particular industry who's paying their super PACs and PACs tell them to do. And it's not that expensive to buy legislation. And the problem is that the people will not vote these crooks in Congress out who are taking these bribes.
But, I mean, to mobilize people or even to get them to be informed, don't you think that's a very time-consuming process? Wouldn't it take years? Or could it
It's a time-consuming process, Johnny, and it's also a process that is time has come and it has to be done now, because the more we dive into this abyss that Rod was talking about, of the government just basically shaving away our rights, and the United States and other Western nations are going to turn into fascist states. You know, look at the popularity of a certain presidential candidate right now, who basically is a proponent of all kinds of fascist ideas.
Yeah,
the popularity of this guy is scary.
Yeah, I feel that the playing field is rather narrow, and there really isn't much of a chance that things would work in the presidential elections. But besides that they probably won't work. Even if a president was elected who had, a good heart, he's up against a Congress that seems to me mostly bought and sold. What do you think, Ron?
Oh, no, definitely. And, you know, I'm still amazed that we have reached this point, that we have come to this point of rapidly declining feelings of freedom and this widespread dissociation with our political system. It is this political system, it's completely dysfunctional. You know, as Ken pointed out, it's very easy to buy politicians. You know, now with Citizens United, it's even easier. And the system is rigged against the little guy, you know. And I don't think that it is a failure of our constitutional system, you know. And not only a failure of our leaders, but I think it is a failure in ourselves, you know, that we have become passive, you know, and quite frankly, a little bit pathetic, that we are not doing enough, you know. It's our time to do something. And I believe that, you know, just as our government is openly, blatantly trying to strip away, you know, our freedoms, you know, our privacy protections, and increase, you know, the police powers at every level, you know, we have to take action. We have to take action. There's no other way.
You know, for my part, I worked with an organization that was trying to put together something like a social network that would be aimed at developing informed members, through media, through their own creation of media, through their own studies together collectively, through their development of initiatives with professionals who might help them out, and would be able to particularly be able to initiate campaigns and promote certain people in the primary elections, and to send initiatives with thousands of members signed up for those initiatives to elected representatives. Unless something like that is done, Bernie Sanders is probably trying to do to develop that kind of political organization old school. Obama used some of that in order to gain his following by using electronic media. But to do it in the right way is going to require, I just don't know, can it be done without doing either an online or offline organization of some type? Because all these advocacy groups, they're disparate. They're not working together. There's no third party that's about to be able to handle things right now.
I think social media is the power of the people right now. I think you're right, Johnny. I don't think it can be done without that, because now instead of one newsletter that you print up and mail out to a mailing list, you basically have access to thousands and thousands of people. And a platform that doesn't cost hardly anything, or sometimes is free.
But I think that the standard media like LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter.
That's commercial, Johnny.
Yeah, it's not going to work, and it's too social or it's too commercial. It has to be really targeted, because this is a very, very big issue. I mean, you take any one issue that you're interested in. Like surveillance or water pollution, and to create initiatives that actually could result in the change in legislation or in the enforcement of legislation would take quite a bit of effort, a collective effort of many educated people working together.
It's true, but you look at the popularity of Bernie Sanders, who should be doing what Obama did, and I mean, think of it, we elected the first black president in history. That's pretty precedential. And he ran on a platform that I really said, yeah, this is, I want this guy, But then once he got in there, I agree with Rod, he had no political capital at all. The people were behind him. But once he got in there, he couldn't really do anything that he wanted to do, because he didn't have the people who are really in power behind those issues.
Well, I
they
think
said, okay, now you got in there, now you do what we tell you to do.
Well, maybe that's true, that somebody told him that, but I don't think it's just the fact that he didn't have political capital, because he did things that he far in excess of, like things like, he promised transparency. He promises, he definitely knew that the torture policy is not like what we are. He was going to close Guantanamo and he'd do this and do that. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty clear that, to me, maybe I'm wrong, that he never could have believed in what he was saying, because he jumped on the alternative train so fast after he was elected. Is that my fantasy?
No, Johnny. I think there's something there. I mean, basically, he's continued the policies that were put in place and continued by the Bush administration. And we've got the most non-transparent government that we've ever had under him. So, no, I think you're right. I think he saw the writing on the wall. And at the same time, he knew people were mad as heck and didn't want to take it anymore, and said what they wanted to hear. And, I for one, am... something could have been done at that particular crossroads at the time he was running for election, but it didn't get done. I mean, we saw the biggest bailout of the big banks, which is basically not trickled down to the people. The financial system is completely corrupt and has never been reformed, and now it's going bad again, and it's just being ignored. So, yeah, I think he saw the writing on the wall. I think you're right.
A lot of people in alternative media, and I certainly don't mean everybody, feel that this is part of a much bigger conspiracy, a much more dangerous conspiracy. And I'm going to go to the limits of what this claim is, right? And this claim is basically that the goal of these people whoever is running the show, is basically to reduce the population of the planet and to create a kind of world government, which is sort of like a 1984 Orwellian creation. What do you think of this claim? Am I accurately describing it? Now, I know we're going to an extreme here.
Well, it's difficult to ascertain, you know, the extent of their plan, you know, how far it goes. But what we can clearly see, Johnny, is that, and this is a fact. This is what we see. These are the facts that we have seen: a dramatic curtailing of our hard won civil liberties. This is what we know. This is what we see, right? And the right to vote. This is a very important right. And what we have now. With the system that we have in place, even though you have the right to vote, it doesn't mean anything, right? Because it's not one person, one vote. It's millions can buy millions of votes, right? So the system doesn't work, right? The prohibition of torture. Well, they were torturing, right? And now we have, as Ken mentioned, that we have a candidate that has taken very extreme positions, including, you know, saying, well, we're going to bring torture back, right? the right to personal liberty, right? And due process. Well, we have people that are being detained, you know, without being charged, you know. We have extreme rendition. And so all those liberties are being challenged right now. Freedom of expression. We have seen a record number of Americans being prosecuted, you know, under the by the United States Department of Justice under Attorney General Eric Holder, you know.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. And so this is very, very troubling. And so I don't really know exactly what the plan is, but what I can tell you is that I know what the consequences are, because we're seeing them right now.
Well, I'd like to just bring up this point. I like to dwell on it, because whether or not there's a conspiracy, let's look at the facts, or at least what some people would say are the facts, that our water is being tampered with for many, many years through fluoride and other types of contaminants, including some types of pollutions. Our air is being tampered. Okay, if you don't believe in chemtrails, you can at least look at Beijing, which just went into a red alert, where people have to wear masks because it's so polluted. For our food, I think all three of us have our own stories, but we all feel like there's something wrong with the food supply, right?
Yeah.
And now then you look at the continual wars, and then you look at the things that are happening in the Middle East and even further with say like the Ukraine, where there's a kind of encroachment by the Western powers on the sort of territorial areas usually acceded to the Soviet Union. So there seems, I'm sorry, it's to the Russian Federation. It just right. seems like they're playing with war. They are having wars, proxy wars, all over the place. But they're also playing with, unfortunately, I would say, nuclear war. So with all this going on, and the fact that there's kind of a potential for a global meltdown with Japan, Europe, and the United States, all and China, all printing money like crazy. You would think that there's something going on. You could think, and whether or not there is a conspiracy or not, there might as well be one, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I agree. I'm not sure if there is a conspiracy. It might be a lot of separate conspiracies, not big grand conspiracy, because every one of these powerful financial elite groups has their own agenda. For example, the GMO foods. Monsanto wants to get into Ukraine. They've bought the biggest seed plant in Ukraine. They're buying up a bunch of land. They're bribing farmers with some educational programs. how to plant our seeds, basically. And the only problem is GMOs are outlawed in Ukraine, but that's not going to be for long, Johnny. And that's part of what you're saying about the military-industrial complex. Is basically it's its own business, but it's being used by these elites to promote their own causes. For example, in Ukraine, that's one of the causes there is to get that land, which is the heartland of farming in Europe.
Well, you know, we're going to go back and discuss this a little bit more. So we're saying, okay, maybe it's hard to pin down if there's a conspiracy, but all these different separate factions seem to all enjoy destroying their sector of responsibility, and we'll be back in a moment.
I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Aaron for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had two seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
By God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, the creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
New Galaxy Enterprises is a media company specializing in wide-ranging content like novels, nonfiction books, screenplays, commercial advertising, web content, etc. One of our most esteemed providers is illustrator Robert W. Zalo. I work on all my most important projects, like book covers, logos, web design elements, with Robert. As an illustrator, he worked on the Ignatz-nominated comic book, The Expert's Guide to Killing Things That Go Bump in the Night. His skills encompass advertising, magazine illustrations, gaming, comic books, TV production, and scenic painting. His clients include Comcast, Adelphia, Haven Talent, Forceworks, High Octane Theater, Star Creative Advertising. If you wish to contact Robert, go to johnnybluestar.com and let me know. That's johnnybluestar.com for artist, illustrator Robert Zalo, an essential component of all the work we do. Maybe he can help you too.
We're back with our discussion of sliding into chaos. Can we protect the American dream? And I'm asking some questions now of Kenneth Eady. And my question is, even though these different factions, corporate and government factions may be separated, why wouldn't a government faction be truly concerned about the danger of GMOs or the research into Terminator seeds or the dangers of, you know, antibiotics, trace antibiotics in milk and in meat products, when there is a great deal of evidence that this is dangerous? And if it isn't dangerous, it's at least something that like the GMO question that's been started that could have ramifications 10 or 20, 30 years from now without any problem at all. None of these things would show up. Why?
There's a very good answer to that question, Johnny.
Okay.
The reason why is it's called the revolving door. And the revolving door is a concept where you have people in industry, and they're very smart people, lawyers and executives of these Fortune 500 companies, for example, Monsanto, who are very smart people, and they know a lot about the law and how to manipulate the law. And they are, because our Congress has been bought and paid for, they are the ones who are appointed to our watchdog agencies like the FDA, the USDA, the EPA, basically those regulators are controlled by people who have been working for people in the biochemical industry, but large firms. The SEC is controlled by people who worked in the financial industry. Basically, the last two heads of the SEC we had came from NASD, FINRA, which is a self-regulating organization that's made up of people in the securities industry. So that's how it works in our government.
Well, I understand how it works, but you still have the question of people in the executive branch outside of the agencies, and you have your legislators surely understanding that this is a danger not only to the longevity of people in general, but also to themselves. Are they programmed the same way that the general population are, that they're not concerned about having too much sugar or having GMOs or having pesticides in their food?
Absolutely not. They're not programmed like the general population. What the thing is, they know the game. They know how it works. How it works is they pick an issue that they want to proceed with, that they feel strongly about. And to get other congressmen or senators on that issue, they've got to give up to one of the other senators or congressmen's issues. And basically, these issues don't pop up out of the air. They don't come about because the congressman himself says, oh, I want to make everything better for the American people. They come in because they're being lobbied and they're getting huge political contributions to push this legislation, which is actually not written by them. It's written by the lawyers for the lobbyists. So they know the game, and they know that they know more than we know because they've got the information at their hands that we don't have access to, basically.
But do they feel any sense of a threat to their own self-preservation? Do they get sick like we do when they eat some of these foods?
Well, it's like, does the head of Monsanto eat GMO corn or eat junk food with GMO corn syrup in it? Probably not. But does he know it's bad? Of course he knows it's bad. But, these people are it's their career. This is what they do for a living. This is how they make their money. It's how they pay their rent. And to stay there for so many years, they have to play the tunes that the industry tells them to play, because the industry is the one that basically pays their bills. So, there's nobody in America except someone who's maybe a self-made man, rich in his own right, and doesn't apply to Donald Trump, by the way. But, I'm speaking about, let's say, John F. Kennedy, for example. He had a rich family. He didn't need to bow to special interest groups, but now that's the way the game is played. It's evolved since his time, and it's evolved to the point where basically industry controls legislation regulation.
One of the things that I remember, because I saw it on YouTube, actually, by Rand Paul, is when I was media director for Wheeling USA, is that he was talking about how they were receiving bills that are like 1,000 pages long, that nobody was reading these bills. And he's saying this in front of everybody.
They don't read the bills, Johnny. They read the summaries of the bills. Someone, another senator who they owe a favor to, says, you got to vote for this. They go, okay. That's how it works. And, you know, Bush, I don't know if it this how accurate this is, but I read a news account from a pretty reputable person that Bush admitted in an interview after he left his presidency that he never read the Patriot Act. Never.
Really?
And he signed that thing into law. Yeah. So, you know, they don't read. It's, I mean, they're too long to read. Look how fast the Patriot Act got enacted, you know, right after 9/11. I'm sure that all these congressmen didn't have the time to study, to research. It was a knee-jerk reaction to the terrorist attacks, and it was an excuse. It's an excuse now for the government to do basically whatever they want.
That reminds me on a financial basis of the great speed in which these bailouts were handled.
Oh yeah, I mean that's another prime example. They printed up trillions of dollars, which the taxpayers eventually have to pay back. I don't know how that's going to work, but basically loaned it for free to the big banks for free. No interest.
Even banks like Bank of America, which weren't particularly in trouble, they sort of, here's some money.
Yeah, take the money. And the rhetoric was the same thing they do when they go into war. They wave the flag. They pick a principle out of the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence. You know, they always go into war under the flag of democracy, right?
Yeah.
They always go into the financial crisis. I mean, we've got to save the banking system. We've got to save the public. All these homes are being foreclosed on. Well, guess what? After the banks were bailed out, all these homes were still foreclosed on, Johnny. And the banks made lots of money. The whole WaMu takeover by Chase was just a leveraged buyout that was orchestrated by the government.
It's pretty.
Chase got enough assets from WaMu, which is supposedly a failing bank. Chase got enough assets and collected on all their bad, not all, collected on a lot of their bad assets and paid off their investment right away.
I want to read you a short poem. I actually read it in another broadcast. It's very short. It's also sort of a short story. You want to hear it?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
One day, New York woke up and saw the Statue of Liberty gleaming gold. The poem engraved on her pedestal had been removed, and a new poem had been substituted, perhaps by her new benefactors. It was titled The Path to Prosperity. And here's the poem. Give me your well-fed, your rich, your pampered classes yearning to decree the fate of masses hardly worth a stare, demanding all those ugly guarantees, fair wages, unions, jobs, and Medicare. Why don't they just give it up and have some tea? Don't tax the rich and it will trickle down and rid them of their jobless misery. And if it fails and they all moan and sigh, we can sit back and watch them slowly die, choking on their dreams of liberty. It's not our fault they pushed into our store. What made them think it was a golden door?
That's a great poem.
Thank you.
you're the author?
Yeah, I'm going to probably turn this into a song.
It'd be a great song. It kind of reminded me of when right after the terrorist attacks. You remember what Bush told everybody on TV? Go take your family down to Disney World. Go to Disney World. We'll take care of this. We're just going to eradicate all your freedoms and just go get out of here, basically.
Yeah, it's like amazing. It's just amazing that people can let this happen and not say anything. But,
yeah,
you know,
I would really
like to do is do something. I tried again to see if I could inaugurate or resurrect this idea that I talked to you about. But I think that there isn't much time. And I don't really know. You see, I think to create something like a Facebook is it's a pretty sophisticated IT job. And there's a lot of components when you think of dealing with, I would create an advocacy group basically for the human rights, the financial well-being, you know, the basic things that most people who realize what is going on would wake up to, you know?
You're right about the IT job, though. I mean, to put all the bells and whistles that you'd want to put in this to make it attractive to people, which is basically my concept of fiction and faction. Yeah. I mean, people want to be entertained, so they buy one of my books, and by the end of the book, they've actually been tricked into learning something important.
Well, I think one thing is that the internet has not really served as a place of universally political discussion.
No, it hasn't. I mean, it's like everything else in technology. It's a great tool for that, Johnny. Like, remember television? I mean, that was supposed to be the same kind of tool for education. It was promoted as an educational tool. What it is a commercial tool. And it used to be Facebook and LinkedIn and all the rest of them.
Yeah, it's the commercialization of government, the commercialization of media.
Yeah.
And just about the commercialization of everything, including prisons, schools, whatever, everything that you can possibly get your hands on anyway.
Oh, yeah, for sure, especially prisons now. I mean, let's put everybody we can in prison and let's not bother to take care of it ourselves. Let's pawn it off to industry and pay them to do it.
Well, what I wanted to say, Ken, about, you know, the name of this program, Sliding Into Chaos, I see so many things that strike me as being unproductive, leading to unproductive chaos, whether it's the way you treat a so-called Ebola, you know, epidemic, or you're dealing with your finances, or you're dealing with the war in Syria. It all seems to be always chaotic, and almost to me, again, I bow to the possibilities that this is a sort of an independent phenomena and not a universal doctrine of chaotic interaction with the world. is that they're actually doing things that anybody who looks at them seriously will say, oh my gosh, why are you doing this? Why are you risking this? Why are you polluting this? Why are you killing this? What is the point? And some people who are in the more conspiratorial mode, I'm a more of a somewhat undecided about certain aspects of this, but they're saying that they're deliberately creating this chaos. And they're deliberately doing things piecemeal to basically pave the way for depopulation.
You know, I think that the chaos is a byproduct of a combination of everyone having a different agenda. And that's why it looks like a grand conspiracy, because they're all using basically the same tools to manipulate the government. But I think that, I mean, as far as the American public goes, I don't know about the world population, but as far as the American population, we're the biggest consumer base in the world. I mean, they need us to buy their crap that they're pumping out. I mean, they need us to buy it. They need us to eat it. They don't necessarily want to kill us with it right away. They want us to live a long time. You know, so there's a lot of medicines out there that you can buy through the big, huge pharmaceutical industry that'll keep you alive, Johnny. Don't you know?
Well, they may keep you alive unless you partake of some of their side effects, and then you may die a very strange and quick death.
That's true.
One second, Ken. Well, we're going to take a break now, and we'll be right back. See you in a few minutes.
This is Johnny Bluestar. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welsh for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for Great Entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welsh. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
The following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here! There's too many of them!" Again, we saw the Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
A special program called Slipping into Chaos. We'll go out with a smile with my friend, Patricia Welch.
Such a feeling's coming over me. There is wonder in most everything I see. Not a cloud in the sky, got the sun in my eyes, and I won't be surprised if it's a dream. Everything I want the world to be is now coming true, especially for me. And the reason is clear, it's because you are here. You're the nearest thing to heaven that I've seen. I'm on the top of the world looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world. Something in the wind has learned my name, and it's telling me that things are not the same. In the leaves on the trees and the touch of the breeze, there's a pleasing sense of happiness for me. There is only one wish on my mind. When this day is through, I hope that I will find that tomorrow will be just the same for you and me. All I need will be mine if you are here. I'm on the top of the world looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world. I'm on the top of the world looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world. Your love's put me at the top of the world. Your love's put me at the top of the world. Coming over me. There is wonder in most everything I see. Not a cloud in the sky, got the sun.